This is the Library Channel. Welcome to the Simon Ortiz and Labriola Center Lecture on Indigenous Land, Culture, and Community. Presenting Legacies of the Tribal Languages of Arizona, Gifts or Responsibilities, with Ophelia Zepeda. Sponsored by the ASU American Indian Studies Program, the Department of English, the American Indian Policy Institute, the Labriola National American Indian Data Center, the Faculty of History in the School of Historical, Philosophical, and Religious Studies, Women and Gender Studies in the School of Social Transformation, the Indian Legal Program in the Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law.
Well, go on, see. Kaitawa haupa chutraya shapaka. Well, hello, how are you this evening? Good. Because we always want life to be good, and life is pretty good. Because that is what we always wish for in the Akoma language and in the English language. We wish for life to be good. Thank you very much for coming to this edition of the Simon Ortiz and Labriola Center Lecture on Indigenous Land, Culture, and Community. The series is sponsored by the Department of English at ASU and also the American Indian Studies and the Law School, the Sandra Day O'Connor Law School, and the Indian Legal Program, and other departments at ASU. And of course, we thank also the Heard Museum, who has really been very, very supportive and especially generous in its sponsorship and partnership with us from ASU to hold this series. I want to say a few words about a very special person, a good friend who I have known for some years in Tucson and in Arizona, of course, in general, and at the University of Arizona, where I summertimes I used to teach in a program that our guest has run called the ALDI, or American Indian Language Development Institute. And it's a project and an ongoing program that has been there for the purpose of helping to continue the use of our Zeni, our language, and the way that it's necessary for culture, for land, and community to go on. This person has worked very hard in a good way so that the efforts that she and, of course, others make it possible for the indigenous community to go on and on in the way that it thrives best with its own sense of language. And I also regard Ophelia Zepeda, our guest tonight, to be one of those wonderful poets who incorporates her language. In other words, the very deep core of herself as an O'odham woman, a citizen of this desert land, to present through her poetry that spirit and that sense of continuance, so that so that we will go forward into the future, always go met kumatsi Hachsaime, Zi Meyun, Zi Shami, Zi Sayu Kaiti. so that we can go forward as women and men, always with courage holding us together. So with those few words, I would like to have Dr. Ophelia Zepeda come up here and share with us her knowledge and good spirit. Ophelia?
Si sapanta mam to si che nako kya e atata homo ithodni tam jit ba up mat hekani si sapanta mat binywa ita nawoch Simon Ortiz tam jitam ma paf tip kana be Arizona State University tam musaba ju matya Pusish Sanako Kyatanam, Kyawash as a journey, get pumped by Pohaichu, Sahamai, I Amaju. Avakaijitam, when you go up at that, Abbey Chukron up to Hokay, Amjit by Chipkin Abbey. I mean, him to either Chipkin with a bag or Dam Yoka Chipkin. And Homomia, I should him to Nipian Yaritam and pumps homo sap. So it's my pleasure to be here this evening, and also, of course, I want to acknowledge and express my appreciation to my hosts at Arizona State University and my friend Simon Ortiz for the invitation to come and be part of this very nice speaker series. And of course, it's always nice to be here at the Heard Museum and to have, you know, be one of the presenters here on the grounds of the museum. And it's always nice to come back to this part of the state. But this morning I was telling the students more informally that even though currently I live in Tucson, I'm actually more familiar with this area than the Tucson area, at least was before I, you know, spent time in Tucson, because our family is not that far from here. For those of you that know Odom history, know that Odom still have traditional villages in Sonora, Mexico. So my parents were from a village in Sonora, Mexico. So when they came into the United States in the 1940s and 1950s, they did not end up on the reservation, essentially, basically because that's not where they're from. And what they did was they ended up in the little border towns around the Odom Reservation. And they used to be in Ajo and Gila Bend. And then I think the last place was Stanfield, Arizona, which is not that far from the northern end of the Odom Reservation. So that's where we were all born and raised. And so I'm not from, you know, the reservation in that sense. And for our families and all our relatives that lived in places like Stanfield and Maricopa and Eloy and Picacho, Florence and Coolidge, our main occupation was agriculture. Back then it was picking cotton. And so the Odom on the main reservation had a name for us, and they referred to us as Toki Oitekit Odom, the people that live in the cotton fields. And that was because our families lived in those, among those cotton fields permanently, year-round, where other Odom only came seasonally and then went back home. And So my point is that's, you know, where I was born and raised, and so was that part of Arizona is much closer to places like Tempe and Chandler and of course Phoenix. So this area is much more familiar. But then of course I have affiliations with ASU from way back when. ASU was my first college experience right out of high school. And then I did 1 year of undergraduate work at ASU as well. And I can't say that the memories there were good. I know I nearly failed English, so that's something I bury in my subconscious. But when I come here, I think that's the first thing that comes forward. I almost failed English here. But despite that, you know, things turned around for the better. And then, of course, you know, places like this, the Heard Museum, over the years, with my, you know, the type of work that I do, I've been very fortunate not only to work in linguistics and Odum language and American Indian language education and so forth, but I'm very fortunate to be a person who is very open to other fields, you know, and also to have that interest to write, that has taken me to other places, other disciplines, and, you know, enabled me to meet other people. And so I've, you know, known some of the folks here at the museum for quite a while, you know, and we worked closely on this one large project for quite some time. And so I always feel good when I come to the museum here. So I'm very happy, you know, for the invitation and the opportunity to be here this evening. So what I like to do this evening is, even though my field is in language, and a lot of my primary work presently is in the area of working with tribal language people in language revitalization, also called language recovery, also language maintenance and language documentation. And I've also worked with educators in the general area of language teaching for indigenous languages. And I myself, have been teaching the Odum language for a number of years. And then I've done, like I said, my other, you know, sort of research fields in topics in linguistics. I didn't want to, you know, really take one of those areas and focus in on it. Instead, I would like to talk, though, about language, about the tribes, specifically in Arizona, but in a more general sense, and hopefully it'll make sense to all of us in the end. And also, I've taken the liberty of interweaving some of my poems that are appropriate to the context throughout the talk. So I hope that it provides a message, a good one, I hope, in the end. So anyway, so that's what sort of the form that I'll be using this evening. I'll go ahead and get started. And my title, the title that I gave Simon early on, was The Legacies of the Tribal Languages of Arizona, Gifts or Responsibilities. And so I will try and go back and forth between those two things, and you'll quickly understand, I think, what I mean by gifts and how the gift has now become a responsibility, sometimes, you know, viewed as a responsibility that might be a burden, other times a responsibility that we choose to take on and make the best of it. So that's sort of the overall theme that I'm going to be looking at this evening. So again, my appreciation to all of you for coming. And so I begin with placing ourselves. The mountains surrounding us at this time, the chain of mountains surrounding us at any time is powerful. The chain that ties a people together is as powerful. A chain must have flexibility, though, in order to be strong. Mountains change and move over time and somehow remain strong. If not, they fall. The chain that ties people together adapts and changes over time, and each time we would like to think becomes stronger. And like a mountain, if it's unadaptable, it too will fall. I like to think that some of the important links in the chain that hold a people together include the Nyok, the Chuktoduk, the Jewitika, language, memory, and land. As part of this chain, language changes over time and so remains strong. It is amazing, though, considering the onslaughts native languages have taken for over 500, 600 years, that they still ring across this land. On many levels, they are still strong, but of course we know that in other ways they have suffered and are fairly battered. In some places in Arizona, like in other places of the U.S. and the world, the language is just a whisper. And in other places, it's only a vague memory that is being brought back by means of earlier documentation. And memory, if carried and cared for, maintains its strength and is an important part of our foundation. The land, of course, is forever, no matter how we change it. The element that will tie my thoughts together, keep my stories in line, will be this chain, which contains as links, as I mentioned already, language, memory, and land. Language, as we know, cannot stand alone. It is an element of our humanity that has many components, many mysteries, many anomalies still. The Tohono O'odham, like many other tribal people, hold up their language as one of the most important gifts given to the humans when they were first created. It is this gift of language that will help me weave my stories, my memories together. And of course, the land will always be there. Finally, before I really begin my talk this evening, of course, I want to respectfully acknowledge the land, the people whose traditional homeland this is, our relatives or my relatives, the Akimir O'odham, the Onuk Akimir O'odham, the Gila River people or the Pima, the Salt River people, the other group of Pimas. Coming here early this morning, I passed by the roads and the trails that lead to the Akimir O'odham communities, among them Chukumashudak, Siofshudak, Gomatk, Kuki, Hashanjkuk, Stotanik, and most importantly, Va'aki. These are the O'odham names of some of the Akimir O'odham communities. The people there still know these names, but also the English names. For example, Gu'uki, which literally means big house, is not the Casa Grande ruins, as one might think, but it is the contemporary political center of the Akimir O'odham community, Sacaton, Arizona. The name of the ruins, the Casa Grande ruins, is Va'aki. It is a ceremonial name referencing rain or water. A Tohono O'odham can stand at any point in these parts and will not be able to see the sacred peak of the Tohono O'odham lands, Wau'giwarik, also known as Babakiwari. This attests that this region is not Tohono O'odham land. In a couple of my poems, I have mentioned that a Tohono O'odham can identify his or her homeland if they can see Wau'giwarik from where they stand. There's a line in one of my poems entitled The Black Top that makes the point that wherever the black top roads take a Tohono O'odham person, that they will always see Wau'giwarik in their rear view mirror. The sense of home, even if it is seen through the rear view mirror, is still home. I won't read that particular poem for you, but instead I have chosen one that is specifically about that mountain, Wau'giwarik. It is a piece that is in O'odham and in English, and it is all about praying to mountains. I dedicate this to the tribal people of Arizona, my cousins, the Akimir O'odham, the Onuk Akimir O'odham, and their homelands, and especially their sacred places that, of course, are still here. The piece is called Do Agawicho. Yeah, Chikugoka Do Agawicho, Kuchinu Kai Chunyai. We stand below the mountain and look upward. We look upward in our prayers, in our humility. From the tops of mountains come memories of stories, songs, names of plants, animals long forgotten. Old people dream of days they walked mountain paths. They dream of their sturdy step, their lack of fear of a desolate mountain top. They see things there only rendered in song. Lower parts of mountains are for all humans. We walk along the mountainside knowing ancestors' bones sit in the mountains. They watch us as we pass. We are not afraid. On an unusually cool July day, we drive to Waugirdik. Arriving at the foot of the mountain, I place a towel on the bench and sit down. This place is green and moist. The air is blue. Light mist drifts swayed by breezes. For a few hours on a summer day, this mountain is in tune with the wet side of ocean islands. We sit here below the mountain and look upward. We sit here below the mountain and look upward. Before we do anything else, we open our voices to a greater being. We say we are grateful for being allowed to be here in this wonder. And like flooding waters, the request for gifts began. We ask for strength. We ask for health. We ask for goodness. Finally, we feel the need to justify our request. We begin again. We ask for strength to complete the things we have started to do with our lives. We ask for help so that we may walk with a sturdy step, with good breath and clean light in our eyes. We ask for goodness so that we may have open minds, open hearts. We ask for patience to deal with all those who require it and pass it on to those who are impatient. We ask for forgiveness so we can forgive those who require it and pass it on to those who are unforgiving. We sit here below this mountain and look upward. So, again, with that land base, as I say, it is a very important element when you think about language, and people who speak a language have a clearer understanding this above all. This evening, I want to cover a couple of points regarding the tribal languages of Arizona. The first is understanding of the language as a gift to the people. And second, how this beautiful gift has become, by some definitions, a responsibility. And finally, I will conclude with a proposition for us to consider. So, the gift. To begin, the claim is understandable. That is, the tribal people, as a linguistic and cultural group, have an understanding of how language came to them. For many, their evidence is held in the memory rendered in their telling and retelling and retelling of their coming, that is, their creation. Whether the creation pronounces the first people, the first of their people was put in a special place. The place might have been near the water, on the mountain, near the mountain, or else if they emerge from the floor of the earth. Among the other gifts of what might be considered gifts of humanness, language was one of the primary gifts. It is a special gift, and oftentimes you might hear tribal people claim that language is sacred. This is a claim that stems from this knowledge that it was handed over by some entity which was the most sacred. Hence, language is then sacred. Are there any other cultures in the world that consider their language such a sacred element? Where do the English language and other European languages fit? Are they the sacred as well? It is clear that Native people regard their language in an entirely different frame than speakers of modern English, for instance. The following poem is an account based on the collective memory of all of them with a similar experience. One cannot speak of the tribes of Arizona and ignore the international border that split a people, stranding them in two countries. The Tohono O'odham is such a group. Even though the poem is about documenting oneself for political reasons, the main reason I'm sharing this is the point that it makes about language, that language is a gift with unusual powers, and that my parents believed this about language and that they practiced it all their lives. I grew up around these beliefs, and they have shaped my understanding of the world around me. And this is the poem that's entitled Birth Witness. And as I said, the original source of the poem, and in fact it was a requested poem for an organization dealing with the topic of the international border in the United States, Mexico and the United States, and they asked me if I would participate, you know, on their panel and talking about border issues. And I have never been involved in the border issues as a political issue, even though our tribe certainly is in the middle of all of that. But I have instead sort of stood back because my experience with the border is very different. As I mentioned earlier, my parents are, our homeland is on that side in Mexico. But for us, it's not Mexico, it's just home. And so, you know, to make it political and hard just makes it harder on us to think of going home or to think that that is our home and will always be our home. So I sort of have a different perspective, but certainly I appreciate the political and social issues of you know, that border there. So this piece is partly about, you know, sort of the politicization of identity and belonging. And I use language to make a point about belonging and who we are as O'odham people. And the experience here, of course, is based on real life experiences of many O'odham people who fall in this situation, trying to prove, you know, where they're from. And it requires paperwork. And so this is one of those stories. My mother gave birth to me in an old wooden row house in the cotton fields. She remembers it was windy around 1 in the afternoon. The tin roof rattled, a piece uplifted from the wooden frame. It quivered and flapped as she gave birth. She knew it was March, a windy afternoon in the cotton fields of Arizona. She also used to say that I was baptized standing up. It doesn't count, the woman behind the window tells me, if you were not baptized the same year you were born, the baptismal certificate cannot be used to verify your birth. You need affidavit, she said. Your older siblings, you have some, don't you? They have to be old enough to have a memory of your birth. Can they vouch for you? Who was there to witness my birth? Who was there with my mother? Was it my big sister? Would my mother have allowed a teenager to watch her give birth? Was it my father? I can imagine my father assisting her with her babies, my aunts. Who was there when I breathed my first breath, took in those dry particles from the cotton fields? Who knew then that I would need witnesses of my birth? The stars were there in the sky. The wind was there. The sun was there. The pollen of spring was floating and sensed me being born. They are silent witnesses. They do not know of affidavits. They simply know. You need records, she said. Are there doctor's receipts from when you were a baby? Didn't your parents have a family Bible? You know where births are recorded? Were there letters, announcements of your birth? I don't bother to explain my parents are illiterate in the English language. What I really want to tell her is they speak a language much too civil for writing. It is a language useful for pulling memory from the depths of the earth. It is useful for praying with the earth and sky. It is useful for singing songs that pull down the clouds. It is useful for calling rain. It is useful for speeches and incantations that pull sickness from the minds and bodies of believers. It is a language too civil for writing. It is too civil for writing minor things like my birth. This is what I really want to tell her, but I don't. Instead, I take the form she hands me and I begin to account for myself. So that section on the language, those, like I said, are the things that we were taught and believe. Even though my parents never ever made that utterance, language is sacred. They didn't have to say it. They just did it in that way and essentially practiced it. And so that's what you grow up learning. And that is your understanding of language. I myself am a person who abides by the seasonal restrictions and protocols of storytelling, and therefore I cannot make specific reference to our origin story, especially the stories of other groups. As far as I know, we have not yet had frost yet in the Phoenix area. In fact, Phoenix is just now cooling off, you know, into the 70s in the morning. The cool frost of a desert morning is only a memory and a yearning for us right now. Since the weather is not cold, we cannot speak those words that tell of the places and the events that brought us here. Do you know that since some tribes now have contemporary writing systems, and that the systems are designed for the general population, unlike the earlier ones that were meant for specialists like linguists, ethnographers, and missionaries. And that many of the tribes have written down their stories, the stories that are seasonal. So the question often arises, what happens if it is written down? Is it allowed to be read out of season, since it's no longer just a telling? My understanding is, no, you cannot read those stories even out of season. I learned this from some of the language teachers. I remember very clearly some Apache teachers who told me that they would take their books when the season ended, box them up, and put them away off the shelves completely so that the students would not be tempted. I think that this is a wonderful example of contemporary treatment of the gift. The words are packed away for a long seasonal rest until it is time for them again. So certainly as a spoken form, language is a beautiful gift. Presently, the tribes of Arizona are very, very fortunate to still have the opportunity to hear and speak the spoken language, to sing the songs, tell the stories, to pray, to do orations and speeches, to tell jokes and riddles in the language. although some of the tribes of Arizona have only a small number of speakers left. For instance, the case of the Mojave, who have to claim only, you know, just a handful, and of the fluent speakers, just one or two. On the other extreme, for the state of Arizona, we have the Navajo Nation and their population. Just because their population is huge in the first place, that of course lends it well to have still large numbers of speakers in the thousands. But Navajo, like Odom, although Odom is not a huge tribe, it still has large number of speakers. However, the speaker age is anywhere from their 30s and 40s on up. And that is not a good sign. Like Mojave, some of the smaller languages of Arizona are not faring well. So the gift we were given is in very poor shape. In Odom, we say, we have not taken care of it, or we have not watched over it. Taking care of something can also include the act of nurturing. Nurturing a language involves one primary act, just using the language. This is where we are presently, taking a look at this gift and making efforts to take care of it much better than we did before. This is probably one of the understandings when we were first gifted the language, that we were to take care of it. It makes sense, doesn't it? But I can't say for sure, since I cannot tell the story now. That is, we cannot talk of the creation story now because we are still out of season. So perhaps those delineations were there. Maybe the bullet points telling us you must do this. And a lot of them are like that. Do this in order to be a human being, in order to be an Odom, in order to be Navajo, in order to be Hopi. You do this and you do this. And those are laid out, like I said, in those stories, which we cannot refer to right now. Instead, though, I will fill that space with some of my own poems. But instead, these poems reflect frustration, sometimes anxiety, that exists for those who don't speak the language well, have limited knowledge of the language, or are trying to learn the language. We have a significant population of young adults and younger tribal members who are trying to learn the language as essentially a second language. And we also have lots of tribal members, you know, where there's this situation where they know the language, but they don't use it. I know lots of young Odom people, I can speak to them in Odom, and they know exactly what I'm saying, and they answer back in English. And, you know, and their explanation for it, which is, you know, been studied well, you know, there's just this insecurity and anxiety about opening your mouth to say something. And so that's what they say, you know, I can't answer you in Odom. I think I know what I can say or should say, but I'm afraid of what I will sound like. And I don't want you to hear me this way. And so they answer in English. And so there's this mix, you know, of speaker variation all across all the tribes in Arizona. And so this poem, a couple of short poems, that sort of refers to that, you know, feeling that many of these people have. And like I said, they don't have to be very young people. And this first one, though, also was inspired by some of the interviews that Anne was talking about earlier in the home interviews. And it was a young woman talking about language and her desire to want to know the language, to learn the language, and that was her goal. But she's having a bad time of it right now. And so this is where this poem comes from. And the piece is called The Pain of Speaking. And I think those who really want to say something, especially the ones who know, who understand you, and they want to say something, I can imagine how not only frustrating, but certainly some physical pain they must experience in making that decision, you know, knowing what to say, but not allowing it to come out. The pain of speaking. And she says, I hear them laughing, a joke. I have no clue. In my grandmother's mind, a million pieces of information I cannot access. Not yet, at least. I bought a book for learning the language. I hear them talking. Sometimes, just by the rhythm, I know they are talking about me. Right in front of me. Having no voice in this language makes me invisible. It hurts. I scream. They look at me, guilty. So the speakers know what they're doing when they do this. And those of us that work with language teachers, I know my friend Dr. McCarty can attest to this, you know, that there's this process where you do have to work with language teachers about do's and don'ts when it comes to trying to teach language. Things like don't laugh at your speaker when they make a mistake, don't ridicule them, and so forth. Be as supportive as you can as a language teacher. Not even a formal language teacher, but as an adult working with somebody who's trying to learn the language. But it's definitely hard to do. Because I know, Indian people do this, you know, and other people, I'm sure, somebody makes a mistake in the language and it comes out, you know, sounding different and sometimes meaning something different and something funny, probably, or awkward, and you can't help but laugh. So it's a very hard thing to control in order to be a supportive teacher. The second piece is my view of people that I've met over the years of working with what I call language workers. These are the teachers, resource people, cultural experts, language activists from tribes, you know, across the U.S. and other parts. This poem is sort of a panorama of the personalities and, of course, some of their intent when it comes to language. So it takes all types, you know. We're not just one coming out of one mold. And this piece is called Walking with Language, and it's, again, referencing people and their efforts. Walking with Language. Some have carried it, held it close, protected. Others have pulled it along like a reluctant child. Still others have waved it like a flag, a signal to others. And some have filled it with rage and dare others to come close. And there are those who find their language a burdensome shackle. They continually pick at the lock. So perhaps you know people like that. Many tribal people understand to be the gift, one of the gifts given when they were first put on the earth or wherever they were put. But things, you know, have gone wrong. And like I said, one of my explanations is the way that Odum people look at things, is that we have not cared for it. And when Odum people say that, you know, they can say that about other entities. They can say that about ceremonies. If a ceremony is falling apart, it's not being done right, whatever. They say that, you know, Pipdapanyukut, you didn't care for it correctly, you didn't prepare for it correctly, and so forth, and that's why it's not working. And in a way, that's true, you know, the practice, making sure people are interned, apprenticed, you know, to carry on the songs and the prayers. If you don't do that, things will not look right later on. And so, you know, we can say that about language, at least from my perspective as Odum. So now, because it's, you know, in this state, however you, whatever label you want to choose, you know, it's, we have lots of them. You know, it's an endangered language, it's a dormant language, it's a sleeping language. That's where, you know, we are currently. So because it's in this state, you know, now it has, for some people, as I said in the poem, it has become a burden. And some have given up on it, you know, walked away and left it. They said, we're never going to get it back the way it was, so why bother? And they have moved on. We know people like that. And then there are others who have, you know, taken up the job to do something. And right now, there are lots of things going on. There are some things we can look at and say, yes, it's working. We know we're creating new speakers. And there are others where it flounders, and there's lots of reasons why they flounder, and so they don't work. So this is the state that we're in right now. This is the state of the Arizona languages currently. So the responsibility. Today, many Arizona tribes struggle to maintain their languages, while others have larger challenges of recovering what is now dormant and try and breathe life back into them. Presently, there are any number of language programs, classes, language learning groups, and so forth taking place in reservation communities and a few schools, mostly on reservations. They make headway despite the multiple roadblocks of state and federal mandates, in particular those teaching language in the schools. The onslaught of high-stakes testing and redirecting of language teachers to other areas have been one of the most recent and devastating challenges to language programs in schools. But nonetheless, the ingenuity and the talent of many of the language teachers persistently push forward for the benefit of the language and the people. During my 30 years of work in language and with language educators and activists, I've had the honor of knowing many of these tireless people. For instance, the energy and tenacity of the late Daniel Lopez, also the late and very energetic and creative Mrs. Rosilda Manuel, and both of those were Tohono O'odham. Two women that my colleague and I were very close to and respected from the Navajo Nation, Mrs. Galena Dick and Mrs. Agnes Holm, and our good friend at who was also at the University of Arizona, Mr. Emery Sekikwaptewa, who was Hopi, and from Apache, Mrs. Irene Perry. And this is just to name a few. These are some of our early pioneers in contemporary language teaching across the state of Arizona. They have left a legacy of younger teachers, all of whom who have an understanding and have taken on the responsibility of taking care of the gift. I continue to be humbled when I work with many of these teachers. It is my sense that the tribal people of Arizona have, it is my sense that the tribal people of Arizona have made efforts to take on the responsibility of the language. They try and maintain what has always been there, while others, like I said, work to recover what has been lost and probably set it out there as evidence that language can be brought back. The tribal people have been these energetic and persistent language workers thus far. But here I want to briefly evaluate the work of our larger institutions of higher learning, the universities and the colleges, and what they have done or not done to help with this responsibility with regard to the languages of Arizona. So why should these institutions take on or be part of this responsibility, you might wonder? Well, I think as human beings, we all have language in common. Language, again, is part of our humanity. It is a great loss to humanity when a language is lost or decimated. It should be all of our responsibilities to do what we can to bring attention to the case of the languages of Arizona. So what are the institutions doing? And here I'm just a brief overview, and most of this information I have from looking at the three universities' sites where they would normally offer tribal languages. Some vary, you know, for instance, the University of Arizona's language courses are in the Department of Linguistics, where NAU is over in English. So you sort of have to seek it out. NAU has had a Navajo language course on the books for a few years. They have a regular undergraduate Navajo language course, and they also have a language course for preparing teachers who are going to teach on the Navajo reservation. So this is a language course specifically designed for them. And they also have on their books something that is called, you can minor in Navajo language. So but it's an interesting minor because they really don't have other courses that's really specific about Navajo, so the language part is about the only one there. Of course, we can't say, you know, anything about, or I don't want to include the tribal colleges, Diné College and Tohono O'odham Community College, because they're different. You know, they sit on the reservation, and part of their, I don't want to say mandate, but part of their mission that they set for themselves as a tribal college always includes the language. So Diné College definitely has, you know, a long history of offering Navajo. Tohono O'odham is the same way in their short history. So they're somewhat different from, say, the three universities in the state. So anyway, so NAU has, you know, that history of some Navajo language teaching. Some years ago, they used to also offer Hopi language there at NAU, but I don't think they have in quite some time. ASU, to my knowledge, has not offered regular tribal languages on a regular basis. I know that they have offered Navajo in the past and do it irregularly. Oftentimes, it is difficult to get a regular instructor, you know, that is qualified or eligible to teach at a university level for a language course. So I know ASU has had that gap for quite some time. But also, ASU, considering where it sits, has, to my knowledge, never offered an O'odham language class, even though they're sitting right here fairly close to O'odham lands. And I know O'odham language teachers, they're sort of paraprofessional teachers who have taught language classes at Scottsdale Community College and Mesa, where lots of O'odham people attend for classes. So we have, you know, this inconsistent pattern. So surely students, both native and non-native, would benefit from language classes at these institutions. My sense is that just taking an indigenous language class just makes worldlier citizens of our young people, while simultaneously bringing attention to the richness of the linguistic diversity of Arizona. The University of Arizona at Tucson has had a different history with regard to language, and I think it's largely due to the fact of partly of our anthropology department, who used to have a very strong focus on research among Native populations, and then our linguistics department, which was created with an emphasis in Native American linguistics, and that's the program that I went through. And so I think because of that kind of emphasis being there early on, it made it easier to develop courses at the undergraduate level in tribal languages. So for the past 20 years or so, we've been offering the Navajo language class, and then almost 30 years now, I've been doing the O'odham language class because I created that course when I was a graduate student. And also the late Emery Sekikwaptewa also offered Hopi for nearly 20 years until he passed away. We also had offered the Yaqui language class, which is of course the Yaqui tribe is just down the road from the campus. So so the U of A fares a little bit better. The problem is those of us who have been regularly teaching the language classes at our campus, I mean, there's no better way of saying it. It's just that we're getting old and we're going to be leaving. And it's hard to really see who's coming after us, you know, behind us to take over that responsibility. So that's the challenge that we are facing right now. I've trained and gotten some Odom people through our master's program in linguistics, but the tribal college is very appealing and recruited them right away, so they could not go on or not been able to go on to other advanced degrees at this point. So it's a struggle to find talented people to come in. Having our large institutions offering the tribal languages of Arizona is not only good for students, but also sends the message that our institutions, our universities, appreciate the trials facing these languages and their speakers, and that they are willing to take on some of the responsibility of helping to support the maintenance and promotion of these languages. I don't think it is that much to ask. Finally, as I mentioned earlier, I wanted to make a proposition. The proposition is to request that the leadership of our three universities invest in the tribal languages of Arizona. The investment can take any shape, and I acknowledge, for instance, that many of my colleagues have taken on these challenges at the three universities. The investment is one that will have significant return. The returns will be in the form of strengthening the linguistic diversity of our state. Another is that knowing that these institutions didn't stand by idly, but were part of the effort to help maintain, recover, document, and support the teaching of these languages. The return will be that the institutions put a hand forth, they put a hand forth and helped to take care of what needed caring. In the end, in the very end, we will have our reward. So I want to conclude with a poem that speaks of that reward. For the Odom, they believe that the best place is the place of rain, moisture, and light winds, and that all are and all that are part of this event. It is what we desire when it is 116 in Phoenix and the air conditioner is working to capacity. It is relief, simple relief. It is our reward. And I think it's just the reward that we feel. I mean, you get it in different ways. It is the reward that you will get when you know that you have taken up, you know, the challenge, or you have supported someone else with their mission, with the responsibility of taking care of something. And that's all that I want to propose. And that we take it on, that we all take it on, simply because we are human beings. So I conclude with this bilingual piece about going to that beautiful place, and that beautiful place is all our reward. And the piece is called Nyenye Hashagit. Haka chuginyo imo amkai de kim tashud ni kawi amkai de kim si arik tagyo amkai de kim ju pin tagyo amkai de kim wakorim tagyo amachai chugit shagi de mom kai de kim saftaha de gok deep de safwak chukto de skuga jok de juwa de skuga jonyan ginyi sujuch bi gonya an ginyi ka chukka chum shu de tmia bat ka chugi gos tmia bat ka chuk skuk kur the mia but ska chuk skuk nyenye it mia but ka chuk skuk nyenye it. In the midst of songs, we hear the songs resounding. They are resounding toward the sunset. They are resounding toward the sunrise. They are resounding toward the north. They are resounding toward the south. We are in the midst of songs. Our heart is full of joy. Our mind is good. Our land is good. The land is all beautiful. Take a look. There is a light rain outside. Take a look. We hear the ocean in the distance. It has come near us. We hear the beautiful wind in the distance. It has come near us. We hear the dust storm in the distance. It has come near us. We hear a beautiful song in the distance. It has come near us. We hear a beautiful song in the distance. It has come upon us. Thank you very much.